you're new here, my name is Tim. I'm the lead pastor, and I just want to welcome you. You're catching us in the middle of a really important series as we're talking about mental health. And we know that it is something that all of us wrestle with at times. Our mental health is a struggle. And today, as we continue this conversation, I want to talk about depression and despair. I want to talk about them. Now, here's what I want us to understand is that although a lot of these mental health different categories kind of seem to collide. Like last week, we heard an incredible message from Pastor Russ on anxiety. Come on, that was an incredible word. A lot of times, here's what we notice is that anxiety and depression tend to run together. They tend to sometimes, but they aren't the same. And so I want to talk a little bit about depression and what I would say is the really deep, dark place of despair. And it is something that I was unaware of this, but we submit our notes to counselors and we get feedback throughout this series. And I was shocked as one of the counselors told me this stat and I wasn't aware of it. But in 2017, depression became the leading cause of worldwide disability. That just blew my mind. I didn't realize how significant depression was. And maybe some of you have had experience with this, how debilitating it can be. And so it's become a worldwide disability, depression, number one cause. And in our own community, before we began this series, we did a survey just to ask you about your mental health. And what we discovered was nearly 50% of our community said that they have experienced some form of depression over the last year. And so I imagine that many of you have walked through something, you've gone through where you've experienced an extended season of sadness or grief or pain. And it's a very real thing. It's kind of hard to even talk about with a large group because kind of like anxiety, there's this really broad spectrum of contributing factors and even levels of depression. In one sense, you can deal with a light form or light symptoms of depression where you have extended period of sadness due to grief or things going on in your life. But for others, and some of you know this, that on the far end of the spectrum is where I think you find despair. And despair is that deep, dark pit that you can get to sometimes where you literally have lost all hope. You've lost hope that it's ever gonna get better. You've lost hope that you're ever gonna feel different. Maybe even lost hope for life. And I just wanna say, if you're wrestling with depression at any point on that spectrum today, my hope is that today you will feel encouraged that maybe God will give you just a new perspective to see your situation. And I know when it comes to depression, for the longest time, even clinically and kind of holistically, it was really believed that the whole of depression really came from a chemical imbalance. That there's things not firing right or regulating correctly in your brain, and that is a major contributor, that serotonin levels aren't correct or things like that. But what they've kind of discovered as of late in this field is that they really believe that it is far more complicated than just a chemical imbalance. They really believe it's way more complex, that it infuses things from your environment, your social network, your grief, the way you process things, and possibly chemical imbalance for those that maybe just it's persisted for maybe year after year. And so what I want us to understand about depression is that all of us, to some level, are susceptible to some form of depression in our lives. All of us are. Please hear this. All of us, from time to time, can experience such grief and sadness that might persist that it really could lead us to a point of an extended form or stay when it comes to sadness. And the reason being for that is because life is filled with a lot of pain. It's filled with a lot of heartache. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But the reason why all of us are susceptible to it is because all of us will experience so many of the causes of depression. There's major disappointment in life. When you have put like all of your eggs in this basket of what you're going to be and what life's going to look like and who you're going to be married to and all this, and then it doesn't work out, it can cause you to tailspin into a season of depression. We see it happening through trauma. You see it happening through a failed relationship. It can be so gripping and so heartbreaking, when you have a failed marriage, when you're watching your kids suffer, or even around pregnancy, even around something that's supposed to be such an exciting time, depression often can surround it. Perinatal depression is something that's experienced in pregnancy, postpartum, after pregnancy, those who can't get pregnant, those who've lost a child. All of these factors can really feed into us experiencing at times bouts of depression. There's so many different things. There's chemical things. It is just such a variety. And what I want us to understand about pain and grief is that mourning is part of living. I wish it weren't so. But loss is part of life. And as I was talking to one of my counselors about this message, one of the things that she told me was she said almost completely the primary contributing factor to people that she's counseling with depression is grief. And when I think about life and all of us, I realize, guess what? All of us have to deal with grief. Something you lost, something you hoped for, something that didn't happen. All of us can experience it. And can I just say something for those of you who are followers of Jesus? Can I say this for people of faith? It is okay at times to experience bouts of depression. And I feel like it's important to say that because I've been around church long enough that I've seen there often has been a stigma that if you're a follower of Jesus, that somehow you shouldn't experience deep sadness or grief or maybe even seasons of depression. I knew someone that from a childhood friend that grew up that wrestled with depression his whole life, but always felt like he was somehow not a good enough follower of Jesus, that he didn't have faith to believe in God because he continued to wrestle with depression that he was dealing with. And I just want to just blow that stigma up and say that the scriptures are full of men and women who love God, who follow God, but also experience such incredible grief and pain that they also dealt with depression. And so I want us to understand that you can, I believe, maybe even have the joy of the Lord, but also feel depressed at times. I think you can have full hope and belief in God, but at times you still wrestle in such a deep state of sadness because of what you're going through. And here's what I really believe ultimately. It's not God's desire or his design for us to remain in those feelings. So I think God created us to feel. The emotions that you experience, we don't know joy without knowing pain and hurt. And so I think God created us with the capacity to feel, and that includes even the pain and the grief of this life. But I don't think it's God's design. I don't think it's his desire for us to remain in those feelings, that we get stuck in such a dark place. And here's what probably some of you have experienced: the longer you sit in a season of depression, the harder it is to get out. The harder it is. And so I was asking myself, as I was preparing for this, and I'm asking God, I'm like, God, why is it that some, because we all experience grief, why do some sink into depression and others don't? If we all face grief, why is it that some will slide so far down that they can't seem to see their way out? And you know, the definition of depression, the clinical definition of depression, is to experience the symptoms of depression for at least 2 weeks or longer. In other words, you could be in a season of incredible mourning and hurt and loss, and you can experience depression because it persists. And I just wanna say this: if you are dealing with depression or you have, we strongly around this church encourage you should talk to a counselor. You should do some therapy. If at times it's needed, maybe there's a chemical imbalance, there can be the use of medications. Listen, we just believe in using everything that God has given us at our disposal, every tool to help us in life to be able to live the life that he intended. Amen? And so I just want to say that. I really believe in that. But can I also add that I never want to lose my childlike faith that I don't believe that God can't heal me in a moment. I never want to get to a place where I'm just so lost and stuck in the world that we have a mental health that I stop believing that God can actually reach down and touch me, that God can lift me out of a pit and set my feet on a rock. I don't ever want to get to a place where I stop actually leaning in to some spiritual prescriptions. I mean, I'm all for, let's take some prescriptions if we need it and it's going to be helpful in a season or whatever it is. But I also believe there's some spiritual prescriptions that can actually begin to lift your mood, that can begin to change your perspective, and maybe even help pull you out of it. And if there's anyone that I think is qualified to write a script for a spiritual prescription for depression, it's a prophet named Jeremiah. I don't know if you know much about Jeremiah, but Jeremiah was considered a major prophet in the Old Testament days. He was a voice and a mouthpiece for God for the nation of Israel. But here's the unfortunate part for Jeremiah. His assignment was to speak on behalf of God in Israel's darkest season. He was the prophet that God sent to speak to the nation of Israel and Judah as they were being overtaken by the Babylonians and their hometown was being destroyed, Jerusalem. This was the guy who had this assignment. In fact, because of the grief and what he witnessed, it's often that people refer to him, and this was his moniker, that he was the weeping prophet. I mean, I don't know about you, but I would hate to have that be like, hey, he's the crying pastor. He cries all the time. You know what I mean? Like, that would be kind of a rough one, but it's, you got to understand the season that he went through and ministering was such a hard and painful and grief-filled season that he knew the depths of depression. In fact, I love that God leaves space for us to experience the pain and the grief of life by even including in Scripture an entire book about lamenting. Did you know that? There's a little book in the Old Testament called Lamentations, and it was written by Jeremiah, and it's all about him talking about the grief and the darkness that he feels as he watches his hometown burn to the ground, as he watches the people he loves killed and dragged off to a foreign land. And I think if there's anybody that could speak about depression, maybe to us, it's Jeremiah. And I want to show you a few things that he wrote in Lamentations chapter 3. Listen to this, and maybe some of you are in a dark season right now, you're going to identify with these words. He said this, "Peace has been stripped away, and I have forgotten what goodness, what prosperity is. There's nothing good anymore." He said, "I cry out, my splendor is gone." This line got me. "Everything I had hoped for from the Lord is lost." That's despair. "Everything good that I've been praying for and asking God for is gone, lost." Verse 19, "The thought of my suffering and homelessness is bitter beyond words. I will never," what's this word he says? I'll never forget this awful time as I grieve over my loss. This is what darkness looks like, where I have no peace. Everything I believe God for, everything I hope for from him was lost, it was gone. And here's the language that Jeremiah uses. He says, "I will never forget this awful time. It's all I think about. I can't get beyond it. It's overwhelming to me. I will never remember anything else but the pain of my grief right now." I think one of the things that Jeremiah is experiencing that maybe some of you have experienced when it comes to depression, that maybe some of us have experienced in life, is called selective amnesia. Selective memory. You ever had selective memory? I bet some of you have a spouse that you're like, I'm sure they've got selective amnesia. They forget the stuff I tell them all the time. But selective amnesia is actually a clinical thing. It's something that your brain sometimes does, where your brain, in a mode of survival, will literally shut off access to things that you would normally remember because it's so overwhelmed. And sometimes our body does it, our brain does it, to protect us and insulate us. Maybe that's why people who've experienced trauma have a hard time remembering the details of it. It's because your brain is forgotten it. It's unintentionally. And here's Jeremiah who says, I'll never forget anything but this. He said, the only thing I can remember is this awful time. Now, if Jeremiah were to go to counseling, and I was talking to a counselor who was saying one of the primary methods of therapy that they use, especially dealing with depression, is something called CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. How many have ever heard of CBT before? Raise your hand. Okay, a lot of people have heard of it. Cognitive behavior therapy is something that was kind of created maybe in the last 50 years or so, in the 1960s, 1970s. there was an American psychiatrist named Aaron Beck. And Aaron Beck's kind of credited for really putting all this together, but it had been years that people had noticed. And here's what Aaron Beck noticed as he was a psychiatrist with his patients, and that is that everybody was dealing with depression, being overwhelmed by despair and no hope whatsoever. He noticed that there was a consistent pattern. The way they viewed everything was filled with negativity. That all they had was negative thoughts about themselves, about their world, and about the future. That's what he noticed. All their negative thoughts are about themselves. I just only think negative thoughts about myself. Only think negative thoughts about my world, my situation, the people around me, and only think negatively about the future. It's never going to be good. It's never going to be better than it is now. And as he was noticing this trend, he kind of drew a connection. Sometimes you'll see it as a triangle about CBT that connects your thoughts with your feelings and your behavior. You do know that there's a connection, right? What you think about will determine how you feel about it, which will ultimately lead to how you behave. So you gotta understand, it's sometimes we're overwhelmed by our emotions, but what we don't realize is how much our thoughts play into our emotions that lead to our behaviors. Can I ask you a question? Do you ever think about your thoughts? Kind of weird, isn't it? How do I think about my thoughts? Because if I think about it, then it's a thought. But I'm asking you, have you ever thought about your thoughts? It's kind of weird to think about your thoughts. I've tried to kind of imagine what thoughts are because they're ethereal. They're like, you know, it's like they're not real. And, you know, they just kind of float in and float out. And I'm just trying to picture in the space of my mind and my soul is there's just some kind of nebulous. So there's like a blank room where these little bubbles will just kind of pop, 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 pop and show up. Because here's one thing they've discovered through studies is that we have on average at least about 6,200 thoughts every day. Every human does. You got thousands and thousands of these little thought bubbles that just pop around and just enter into your existence, your mind. I don't know if you ever think about your thoughts, but here's a thought for you. You've never thought about this. Do you realize that every thought is not just some kind of like wispy, imaginative kind of concept that brushes across your brain? But do you realize that every single thought that you engage with actually has a physical connection in your brain to it? There's a physiological response that happens with every one of your 6,000+ thoughts that go through your mind every day. I don't know if you realize that, but it's not just some kind of little bubble, an imaginary world of your mind that exists, but every single thought is connected to neurons in your brain that fire and create and send chemicals that actually do things inside of your brain. Even the dumb thoughts and the thoughts you can't get out of your head and the thoughts that you feel overwhelmed and you're stressed the thoughts of darkness and depression and how life is never going to get better. Do you realize that every single one of those thoughts that you just entertain, that ruminates in your mind, is actually like little bricklayers that are laying a structure inside of your brain? Think about it that way. You literally have little brick guys that are masons that are out there and they're paving a road. They're creating a path or a structure inside of your brain for that thought to persist. So here's what I want you to understand. The more you ruminate and you dwell on and you just think over and over about how terrible life is and how awful it is and peace has been stripped from me and nothing good is going to happen in the future, the more you think about it, the more your brain is literally creating and wiring a structure that will lead to depression. This is why CBT is a practice. It's a therapy. And the goal of CBT is to rewire your brain around something that's positive. It forces you to think about something good. Because when you're depressed, all you can think about is what's bad. And so therapy and CBT is to force you. By the way, here's the most beautiful thing about you. God didn't just create you at the beginning, and so in your mother's womb you developed and then and you just grew to be this person, then God stopped the creating. But do you realize that your body is always recreating? Do you realize there's a cycle where every single blood cell inside of your body is replaced over a certain amount of time because your body is always creating? And that God created your brain to constantly create and recreate, which means that if you focus on that which is positive, you can actually lay a new structure inside of your brain that could maybe lead you in a path out of depression. CBT is about rewiring your brain. Now, here's what's fascinating about Jeremiah. Jeremiah didn't have any good therapies available to him thousands of years ago and all these new technologies and all this, but if we read on, and I'm going to show you this, I actually think Jeremiah should get a little bit of credit for CBT. Because let me show you what he goes on to do. I want to pick back up in verse 20. This is the same passage we're in. What did he say? I will never, everybody say this word out loud again. I will never forget this awful time. That's what depression and darkness feels like. I can't think of anything else. This is all I'm going to ever remember. This is always going to be bad. As I grieve, I think one of the primary contributors to depression is grief, but not knowing what to do with it. As I grieve over my loss. And then look at verse 21. He says, yet. What's he doing? He's speaking to himself. This is CBT, by the way. He's starting to, I got to rewire something. Yet I love this, dare to hope. If you take notes, you ought to write that phrase down. Dare to hope. I dare to hope. I dare. Can I just tell you, some of you are in such a dark place that you're like even afraid to think of what it would look like to get out. Sometimes you got to be a little daring. Sometimes you got to speak to yourself and say, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever going to get out of this. You know what? Maybe today your word is, I'm going to dare to hope. I'm just going to dare to hope. I'm going to put it all out there. I want to believe in something greater than my situation. I will dare to hope. Now, how does he do it? He says, when I do what? Everybody says, when I remember this. What is he going to remember? Because remember what he said. I can't remember anything but the bad. All I ever think about good. What is he doing? He's taking the very thing that would cause him to spin into depression. He's actually turning it around. Look at this, verse 22. What am I going to remember? I'm going to remember the faithful love of the Lord never ends. Oh, that's so good. Come on, I'll clap at that. Yeah, I'm going to choose to remember that his faithful love, his mercies never cease. I'm going to choose to remember that. Look at this next verse. I love this one. Great is his faith. Man, Okay, you remember, this is where we got a hymn from. This is such a powerful verse. Some of you need to write this verse down. Some of you need to read this over and over, meditate on it every day. You're going to lay some new bricks this week. Okay? Great is his faithfulness. His mercies are fresh. Oh, they begin new. They're afresh each morning. By the way, do you know what mercies is? Sometimes we hear mercy and we're like, oh, it's when I got in trouble and please don't spank me. That's not just mercy. This word, mercies, talks about God's favor, his kindness, his faithfulness, God being good to you. He says his mercies begin new and afresh every single morning. Look at this next one. I say to myself, you know what CBT does? It teaches you to do this. I say to myself, the Lord is my inheritance. There's nothing good in front. Okay, stop. No, God is my inheritance. Therefore, I will do what? I will hope in him. This is so powerful. And if we could just get this, and sometimes we have to do this. Because here's Jeremiah, what is he doing? I really think he should have got credit for CBT, because here he is in the depths of despair and complete darkness, and he says, I will never forget how bad this is. This is so awful. I can't forget how bad this is. And he says, wait a minute, stop. Where's my faith? Hold on. I'm going to dare to hope. And I want to spin that and say, wait a minute, I'm not just going to say I can't forget how bad this is. I want to say I can't forget how good God is. I need to say, no, wait a minute. God is also good. You see the nation of Israel? See, they're in such calamity, they're in such pain and evil, but the truth is, God had not actually failed them. They failed God. And Jeremiah, who's looking at destruction and he sees how awful this is, he says, well, hold on. I need to remember that God's also good in my bad season. And maybe you'll have to go back And you'll have to reflect back. I wonder if he had to reflect back on the goodness of God. I wonder if he had to think back even as far as Egypt when God rescued his ancestors through the miracles and he parted the Red Sea so they could go through and he rescued them, or the manna that God provided in the middle of a desert when they had nothing, or the water from the rock, or maybe the way that God gave them a second chance to go into the promised land because it was their negativity that kept that entire generation out, so that they just lived in a desert and they never got out of the wilderness. But God is so faithful and so good, and his mercies never end, that he gave another generation a chance to go into the promised land. I wonder if he had to remember the goodness of God. I almost picture that maybe even as he talked about God's mercies are new every morning, it says in the NIV. I wonder if God had to give him an object lesson. So I picture maybe Jeremiah, who's in such grief, and he's having this dark night of the soul, because depression and darkness go hand in hand. And I imagine as he's having a dark night of the soul and he's there in his grief and his pain, that I wonder if maybe as the sun began to peer over the horizon, that all of a sudden that he had a new perspective. I wonder if as the sun came up, God was giving him an object lesson. See, I picture that. I wonder if he thinks back to the songs that he learned when he was in school. See, their songs are a little bit different than ours, but actually a lot of them are the same because they just came from the Psalms. And I wonder if he just kind of had to, as he saw the sun peering over the horizon, I wonder if Psalm 113 came into his mind. Maybe it was a song he sang when he was a kid, because Psalm 113 says, from the rising of the sun to the place where it sets, the name of the Lord is to be praised. I wonder if the moment he saw the sun peering up and light coming into the darkness, if he remembered this song and said, wait a minute, that the name of the Lord is still to be praised. Look at this, verse 4. It says, for the Lord is exalted over the nations, his glory above the heavens. Who is like the Lord our God? The one who sits enthroned on high. I love this next verse. Who stoops down. He stoops down to look on the heavens and the earth. Isn't it amazing that I want to give you a different perspective, that we are on this earth, and when we look up to the heavens and marvel, when we see the sun and we see the stars at night, and we marvel at the heavens and the display of God's creation in the universe, they realize that God has to actually stoop down to see it. God has to, he sits enthroned over it all, and he has to look down on it. You see, our perspective matters. Your perspective matters. When you're in a state of depression, everything that is wrong is wrong, and everything that could go wrong is wrong, and every problem you have is bigger than the world almost, it feels like. And you can't think about anything else. You can't think about anybody else. All you can think about is your situation. I understand. You know what's interesting? For thousands of years, our ancient philosophers and scientists even, they all believed that the earth was the center of the universe, right? That's what they believed, that the earth, this beautiful little globe that we all live on, that we're just a speck on this big, massive earth, that this was the center of the universe. Everybody believed. You know why they believed that? I understand. Because every day they would see this itty-bitty little ball of light come up over the horizon, and they'd watch it just go up and over and then disappear. And so for hundreds and hundreds of years, everybody was convinced. What were they convinced of? They were convinced that the earth is the center of the universe, that everything is revolving. Just like the sun comes up and it goes down, it must be going around the earth, and that's what we believed, right? It wasn't until Copernicus came along and in studying the movement of the heavenly body, he said, wait a minute, what if we got this wrong? What if the earth is not the center of the universe? What if the earth is actually revolving around the sun? And he began to give us a different perspective that today, through science and our advancements, we understand is a whole new picture of our solar system. We understand that we just exist, the earth, inside of a solar system that's a part of a bigger galaxy, the Milky Way, that's a part of the bigger universe, right? And so if you were to have a different perspective of our solar system, it might look like this. You see that little dot way over there? Itty bitty dot right down there. That's Earth. And you and me are an itty bitty little dot on that little dot down there. Isn't it interesting that that little ball of light that we see, beautiful sunrise, yesterday, gorgeous sunset, I'm so thankful for the sun, right? When we see that little thing in the sky, this little big, that from our perspective, we're really big and it's small. You guys know that's not true, right? You realize that the sun, right, almost 700,000 kilometers across. Here's what we know about the size of our star that we revolve around, that where gravity keeps us in orbit around, right, is that you could fill the size of our sun with 1,300,000 Earths. Can we all agree this is way bigger than this, right? But when we see it from our perspective, it's little. But we're actually little compared to this. And oh, by the way, this is one little solar system in a massive galaxy that has billions and billions of stars. And oh, can I just tell you that our star, this yellow dwarf star, is a very average size star. It's not even that big, actually, in the universe. Do you realize there are way bigger stars than the star that we look at every single day and that we watch the beautiful sunset in our sky? I mean, that's kind of a small one. In fact, I was studying, I was asking, I was like, okay, what's out there? What's the biggest star out there? And as I looked into it, I actually found out the biggest star they found in the universe, regardless of galaxy, so far has been found in our galaxy. And it's called UY Scuddy. Can y'all say that out loud? Because I want you to remember this. UY Scuddy. I have no idea how and why they name these things, but UY Scuddy, that is nearly 1.2 million kilometers across. This picture is for scale. This isn't what it actually looks like. We don't know, but it is considered a red hypergiant variable star. Okay, it kind of gets bigger and smaller as it gives off things. But at its peak, for what they've measured, that the volume of this one star is 1,700 times larger than our sun. Not our planet Earth, our sun. Which means it would take 5 billion of our suns to fill the volume of this one star. Does that change your perspective a little bit of us? Because it does me. You say, what's the point of this, Pastor? Great science lesson. I'm glad, I appreciate that. But what, the point is this. Our perspective matters. It matters. Because when you are so absorbed by your situation, and I understand that, but when that is all you can see, you have a tendency to think how big it is. But I wonder if Jeremiah in this moment is trying to give us a bigger perspective of God, where God says, listen, my ways are way higher than your ways. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so are my ways and thoughts above yours, because I sit enthroned over the very heavens that you look up to and wonder at night. I'm bigger than all of this. Your perspective matters. And listen, I'm not trying to minimize anything you're walking through. Please don't hear that. I'm not trying to say it's trite. I'm not trying to say that, hey, your problems are little, because some of you, and I know because you guys tell us, you're walking through some really hard stuff, some very painful things. You're dealing with some stuff that, quite honestly, it's even hard for me to understand. It's so painful, so filled with grief. I understand. But what I am saying is that maybe God just maybe sends the sun to be a daily reminder. You know, they say sun is really good for you when you feel depressed. Maybe it's not just vitamin C or vitamin D that you need, but maybe it's every time you look at the sun, maybe every single day you do that, it should be a reminder to you that God's unfailing love has never left you, even in the middle of the way you feel right now. That God's mercy, God's goodness, his favor is unending towards you. That God loves you so much that as many stars fill the night sky, God loves you and knows you by name and your situation, and he cares about it. But I wonder if it's just a reminder for us to get a new perspective on life. Because I'll be honest with you, I needed that reminder in 2017. 2017, I had taken that summer and planned a short ministry break called a sabbatical. Never had one before, and I had all kinds of mentors and people saying, if you want to do this for a long time, you need to make sure you need to create some breaks. And so I did in that summer of 2017. I took an extended several weeks off, as I'm having another one coming up. And while I was in the middle of that, 3-4 weeks in, I just began to feel things I'd never really felt before. I began to feel overwhelmed, and it was the weirdest thing, because I didn't have the daily pressures, and I didn't have to prepare a message every Sunday. I didn't have all of that, but I was talking to a mentor who said, you know, a lot of times we don't realize when we're under constant pressure until we get out from it, that we begin to feel things that we didn't know were there. And so 3 or 4 weeks into it, I began to have thoughts that scared me. I began to have feelings like, I don't know that I want to do this anymore. I don't know that I can keep going. And they just came out of nowhere and blindsided me, and I never really felt that about ministry, about my calling, about anything before. And I remember one Sunday morning, I was really at the low point. I was sitting on my front porch, and my wife came out to join me, and I just kind of opened up to her what I'd been feeling. And through tears, I'm just telling her, I'm like, I don't know that I can go on. I don't know why I feel this way, but I feel like my best days are behind me. I don't feel like God's going to do anything good in our church anymore. I don't know that I should be doing this anymore. Maybe it's time to hang it up. I just had a rush of these emotions to the point of like just darkness. And I didn't know where they came from, and they scared me. And I was sitting there, and it was an early Sunday morning. And I had my laptop, and I just logged on to a broadcast for a church, not even in our state, that was broadcasting. And the sermon that Sunday, I know sometimes people tell me this, and like, man, I'm telling you, that sermon was for me, but the sermon that pastor that I don't even know preached, I believe was for me that day. I believe that God was showing me his faithfulness in the midst of the darkness of my moment, my season, and the pastor preached on pressure. I was like, yeah, I feel this. And it was a word that I needed. Sometimes all you need is a word from God in the middle of that season. Now listen, it didn't mean the feelings went away that day. Please hear me. But it gave me hope. It gave me something to dare to hope for. It gave me a perspective in the middle of that season that allowed me to just hang on to God, knowing I was going to have to work my way out of that season. I was going to have to do counseling. I was going to have to, because I didn't know what was wrong with me and broken inside of me. But there was something about that one word that was a life ring for me in that season. And I'll never forget the passage. And I can't talk about the whole thing, but I want to share just a few verses as we close. And this passage has deep meaning for me personally, because it was what I needed in that dark season. And it's found in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And the Apostle Paul, by the way, I would encourage you to read 2 Corinthians 4, the whole chapter this week. You know, the Apostle Paul, and he talks about in 2 Corinthians 1 about getting to the point of despairing of life itself. And you want to talk about somebody who dealt with grief and dealt with pain and dealt with hardship. Okay, the Apostle Paul knows. And so his words were just like a spiritual prescription for my soul that day. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16, he said this, therefore, and you'll have to read what's before it, because that's part of it, but therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed. What? Can you all say this? Day by day. You mean like his mercies are new every single morning? You mean that great is his faithfulness every single day? That from the rising of the sun to the place that it sets, that God is still doing something? Even when the outside of my world is falling apart, I can lean into him. I can dare to hope that inwardly God's going to do something in me day by day. See, I know some of you are dealing with some massive pressure, but what you need is the pressure on the inside. You need God to do something in your soul on the inside. Look at verse 17. He says, for our light and momentary troubles. I know some of you are going, my troubles aren't light and momentary. I understand. This is Paul, okay? Paul who's persecuted, Paul who had someone throw rocks at him, Paul who was beaten, Paul who was whipped multiple times, Paul who was shipwrecked for the gospel. Okay, Paul understands too. He said, for the light and momentary troubles are achieving for us. You mean God's actually going to use it? Yes. An eternal glory that outweighs them all by a mile. And then verse 18, I love this. So we fix our eyes. Can I say it another way? So we fix our thoughts, right? So we set our thoughts, listen, not on what is seen, but what is what? Can you say it? What is? I'm going to put my thoughts, I'm going to fix my eyes on what is unseen, because what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is what? Is eternal. In other words, Paul's saying, you just need a new perspective. You need a new perspective. Some of you are in such dark place, and listen, I want you to get help and counseling and therapy and CBT. Do it all. But can I just tell you, maybe today God wants to lift your perspective a little bit. Maybe if you put your eyes and your focus on your problems or on your 75-year lifespan, your problems of 3 years and 5 years and 10-year struggle, it's a lot. But what would it look like if you set your eyes on that which is unseen, but it's real? That which is unseen, that which is eternal. All of a sudden it changes your perspective. Can I tell you what you can set your eyes on? Go out in the night sky, look up. And I know you can't see this with your natural eye because you're going to need like a telescope. But in that night sky that's mostly dark with a few little stars that look so little, is UY Scuddy. In our Milky Way, is UY Scuddy that we can see with a telescope. I can't see it. No, it's there. It's there. And let that be a reminder to you of the size of your God. That I know your situation feels overwhelming, but God sits enthroned above the very heavens. That you look up and wonder in amazement. God is bigger than those things. He's bigger than that. And maybe we need to dare to hope today. Maybe God wants to give you a new perspective today to say his mercies are new every single day. So when the sun comes up tomorrow, and I know you're going to wake up and you're going to feel the same pain when the sun comes up, you look at it when you're driving to work and you say, God is with me. God is for me. God's love has never left me. He is unfailing. His mercy is with me. And you hold on to that perspective. Come on, stand to your feet with me. Today I asked God, I was like, God, what can I say that would maybe breathe some hope? Listen, use all the tools available to you. But I pray today that God has maybe stretch your perspective a little bit. Our earth, my problem, my grief, my situation, it's real, but it is not the center of the universe. God holds the whole things together with his hands. That God is the one who is at the center. God is the one who's created every single thing. He knows what you're walking through, and he has not left you in this season. And so, Father, I pray right now. I pray, God, over every dark soul. I pray, God, over every person that feels the weight of depression, that feels, Lord, they've been stuck in a season of deep sadness, of grief and loss. And God, I pray right now, today, you would begin to minister hope to them. In the way you spoke to me and you reminded me that you are there when I was at my low season, I pray, God, that you would do that for every person today that needs it. I pray today that, God, we would just lean into you. I pray, God, that we would surrender to you our season and our situation. And, God, I pray that you would just give us some hope for tomorrow. I pray, God, that we would begin to set our thoughts on things above. We begin to set our thoughts on a new perspective on how big you are, God. I pray today, God, that you would give us the boldness to dare to hope. Some of you, maybe that's what you need to do. You just need to dare to hope today. Some of you today, maybe what you need to do is you just need to say, God, I'm just going to trust in you. God, I feel overwhelmed, but I am going to put my hope in you. And God, I believe that one touch from heaven, one touch in your presence, God, is enough to begin to lift me out of this dark place, this pit that I find myself, that you're the God that raises us up. You're a God that still does miracles.
Thanks so much for tuning into this message. I hope that it encouraged you and inspired your faith. If God is doing something in your life, would you take a moment and let us know? We want to connect with you and we want to be able to pray for you. All you have to do is shoot us an email to hello@thex.church, or you can always send us a DM on one of our social media platforms. And if you know somebody that would also be encouraged by this very message, why not take a moment and just share it with them right now? And as always, I want to say thank you to every single person who so generously financially supports this ministry so we can continue to get messages like these out to people all over the world. We believe God is building something special and you're a significant part of it. Until next time, have a great day.